Accession number 30133, Reel 1.
Try it. Okay, so if you just want to say your name and your date of birth.
My name is Reginald George Mason. Date of birth, 23rd of August, 1926.
Let's see if it's worked. Okay, well, according to this, we're now running. So, this is Mr. Mason, and it is the 13th of June, 2007, Reel 1. Okay, now, if I could get you to say again, for the benefit of the real tape, your date of birth, and maybe the place of birth as well.
My date of birth is the 23rd of August, 1926, in Jamaica, Port Maria, the exact.
And what sort of childhood did you have? Busy, or...?
Yes, a fairly busy childhood. Going to elementary school, and after elementary school, I worked for a short while with the government service in Jamaica. Then I joined the Air Force, volunteered to join the Air Force in 1944.
So, what age were you when you started working for the government?
18. Well, I'm 17, and I was 18 when I joined the Air Force.
And did you come from a sort of administrative or sort of executive background?
No, my father was a policeman part time and a builder.
So why did you go and work for the government?
Well, after I left school, I was just filling in the time. Before I left school, the head teacher used to read the war news to us every morning, what was happening in Europe. And then I just fancied I'd like to go across to know, get to know the mother country.
Did the war seem as though it was terribly far away? It was nothing to do with you?
Well, the... Jamaica used to ship a lot of bananas to England, but because of the armed war, all the bananas were bought by the companies, and they just stayed and rot in Jamaica because there was no shipping available. And just to keep the planters going, the government paid for the bananas. They all got rotted on the wharf and things like that.
But that was about the only impact it was having on you at the time. That was the big difference it made.
Well, no, we had shortage of some items that was imported.
And what sort of things would that be?
Well, things like wines and stuff like ham. We used to get ham from England. But then we got most of those stuff from America, being sold there to America.
So you were hearing about the news of the war through
yes.
The headmaster reading
yes, and we used to hear Lord Ho on the shortwave radio in Jamaica.
And what do you think of him?
Well, I don't know. We wondered if he was telling the truth or what, you know. About the British people drilling with broomsticks and things like that, you know, because they were short of the arms.
And did you have any newsreel or anything in those hours?
Yes, but not as much as we used to get it over here. This was just when we went to the cinema, which was the news. We just had. Just slip it off it.
Mm-hmm. And that would be once a week, or?
Well, the newspaper used to print war pictures, and not a great deal. We didn't know a lot about what was going on in the war, apart from what we heard on the radio. But then it was the bitter part. Maybe say all the people that are being killed and stuff like that. And how the British people were suffering because of shortage of food and stuff.
I suppose that for people these days, for the kids especially these days, when they have the electronic media all over the place and 24-hour news and they have news from the other side of the world all the time, it's very difficult for them to understand how it must have been.
Yes, because we had just one radio station, ZQI, out in Jamaica. And it wasn't from morning till dusk, you know, it was certain hours during the day. And then we got the news as they wanted us to hear.
And you had the newspapers as well?
Yes, yes, yes. We had three daily papers. Gleaner was the most one. And we had the Canadian Army out there, because they were doing their training as well, and their support, because British soldiers were busy in Europe, so the Canadians came to Jamaica and they were stationed there.
Did you have much contact with them?
Oh yes, they did part of my training, because I joined up the RAF in Jamaica.
But did they mix with the civilian population very much?
Or oh, yeah.
They kept
yeah.
on camp?
No, they mixed all right.
And how were they? Were they well behaved?
Yes, yes, they were.
So you were quite used to them before you joined up?
Well, no, this is when I joined up. You see, they did part of the training. And the Jamaican Army, they did. Although we were Air Force, but it was the Army out there that because we had some British officers and Canadian officers, and they trained us different.
So when you decided to join up, what did your family think about it?
Well, you see, I could either go to America to work picking fruits or come to England. The parson at the time, he said to me when I was taking communion, he shook my hand and said, good luck on you in England. These people are going to America just for the money's sake, but you're going to the UK to help the mother country.
Can you remember sort of the details, the boring admin of actually having to join up? Did you have to fill forms in, or did you have to go for appointments?
No, we did a test, some arithmetic, and then those that passed the preliminary test, then we were given a full form, RAS form, to fill in what jobs we wanted to do and things like that.
So how many options did you have for that? What did you choose?
Well, in fact, we didn't have a great deal. They said, well, we'll make you aircraft hand general duty, and then when you go to England, then you can remuster to some trade.
So it was all fairly informal at the
time? Yes.
Did you have to just sort of turn up with a little suitcase on the first day, or...?
Well, no, that is interesting, because we... I live in the north coast, not far from Ocheres, and I had travelled all the way to Kingston, Palisades, where the camps were. And because they didn't know when the ship was coming, we... had to take just a few things, and we didn't have any uniform then, because we were still waiting for the uniform to arrive from the UK. So there was people with one pair of shoes, and with drilling and all that, the shoes got worn off. And then in the mornings, when we had the first parade, the NCO would shout, sir, there's two people on sick parade, There was six without shoes. Was, because they've been drilling on these things, and we were supposed to be there for a month or so. Or we spent about nearly 4 months there, waiting for the ship to arrive with the uniform.
So how did you pass the time? Because we weren't doing all the same training.
Yes, we were doing training all the time. That's why they these shoes alone that got worn out.
So what else did you do besides the drilling?
Just drilling. Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And we used to go for a mile run in the morning. Mm-hmm.
You did boxing and things like this?
No, we didn't have anything like that. Mm-hmm. Because, you see, we didn't know how long we were going to be there. Mm-hmm. And then eventually this ship, the Cuba, came out and they brought the uniform and things like that. We had cotton underwear, no, woolen underwear, and great coat, you know, real UK heavy duty stuff. And two American destroyers came to convoy the ship. We, first of all, we went to New York and we picked up some American flyers. There was 2,000 Jamaicans on that ship. And then it took us 14 days to go across. We joined a huge convoy. And then we landed at Greenock in Scotland.
What was it like being on convoy? Because that's quite a dangerous time.
Yes, it was. And unfortunately, I got clobbered for ship's guard every other night. We had to... I can remember the deck. It was Donald 3, D for Donald 3. And every other night I was on duty, just standing by a post. And
nothing happened, you just had to stand there.
Because things like water, it was ration. We had the water on in the morning, and then at lunchtime and at tea time. And the food was atrocious because we weren't accustomed to not having things like porridge without sugar or cocoa without sugar. and that's what we had.
So you had this sort of the English rationing on board rather than the American?
Yes.
So was there anything else that made you start thinking, what have I done?
No, not really. Because we're interested to see what the mother country was.
So you didn't get seasick or anything like that?
Not a great deal. A lot of other people did get seasick. Because every morning we had to come up for boat drill whilst they did inspection down the deck. So when the inspection was, the boat drill was finished, we went down. And that was it. We had to collect, there was a table, 32 men on the table. And we used to go to the galley, collect the mails, brought it back. And can you imagine, we had eggs, bacon, and porridge and this awful cocoa without sugar. we didn't have any fruits at all. I can remember we had the bread from the American, which was quite nice. But apart from that, it took us 14 days to cross the Atlantic. Then when we landed at Greenock, we went on a train right across from Scotland to Filey in Yorkshire.
How long did that take?
Well, it took quite a while. Mm-hmm. Especially in wartime. And then when we got to Filey, we discovered that it was right up on top of the sea was just below us. And it was bitterly cold. because this was November when we came up. See, I joined the Air Force in Jamaica in August, and we never left there until November.
So your first impression was November at Filey.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think?
Well, we used to go down to it's just the Filey village, which was they had all these holiday things, you know, and there were so many Jamaicans that the bus that we in fact they banned us from traveling on the bus because the civilians could get on there. Well, you know, there's 2,000 airmen on these buses, and they were packed. And we were just going up to Filey, which is a short way. And all these people who live far away, they couldn't get on. And it was bitterly cold when we went down to this holiday resort, all the fun things, you know.
And how was the accommodation? Was that any warmer, or was your accommodation?
We had these pipes, these hot water pipes in the chalet. We were living in the chalet, 5 to a chalet, and we had two mess halls, pink and the blue, and they always used to give us lecture just before we went to have a meal, and we had some brown enamel mugs, and when the lecture went on for too long, you'd find one person would drop his mug, and then another one would drop his mug, and it would go on like that, and the lecturer would get mad. We had Larry Constantine. He came to see us as because he was a liaison officer at the time. And he came to see us, give us a talk. And
the other lectures, what were they about? Were they technical lectures?
Oh, we had a medical officer. We had all sorts giving us a lecture.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you think they were useful at the time? Or?
Yeah, I suppose they were. Mm. There was one officer. He came to lecture us. He said, well, I'm the liaison officer. If someone had asked me where Jamaica was yesterday, I wouldn't be able to tell them. So the moment they heard that, you know, the mug started dropping again.
So it's probably not the best time to give a lecture, just as you're all wanting to eat.
Yes, all right.
Was the food any better by this point?
No, it wasn't, because they laid things like boiled onions, and we weren't accustomed to having things like that. And we had big bottles of vinegar on the table. Some chaps thought, well, Europe must be wine, and they tried. But then if you got to work in the cookhouse on duty, then you had a better lot of food, and it was warmer then, you know.
So once you'd arrived and they'd settled you in and you were starting to get used to the temperature and to the food, what did you actually do while you were there?
We just trained. We went on the range and more training.
Mm-hmm. Was there a routine to each day? Or?
Oh, yes.
So is there a typical day that you could talk through?
Yes, we had to have kit inspection and things like that.
So that was before breakfast, or?
No, before breakfast we used to go on a run, and then on the square, the drill square, there's ice on the tarmac, and we were marching our way there, and if somebody would slip on the ice, you know, and, with his gun on his shoulder.
That sounds quite dangerous. Mm. Were there any accidents?
No, no, because they weren't loaded, you know, just... and we went into the gas mask, where we had gas mask, webbing, and rifle, long arm bayonets and stuff like that. And then we had ration, all the chocolate and cigarettes was ration. Before they gave us the ration card, and they used to just pencil it in, and then people used to rub the pencil mark out and get more ration. Then they decided now they'd put a hole in the
So I suppose everyone was smoking in those days.
Well, no, no, I didn't start smoking. They could give your cigarette ration. In fact, most of the chaps used to give their cigarette ration to the naffy girls. Yes, we had, I'd say, two cinemas, and we had film shows that we could go to.
And this this date was 1944, wasn't it? So it was right at the end of 44.
Yes.
So did you have the impression that things were sort of calming down a bit as far as the European front was concerned?
No, because I know the war was still going on, because we used to see the 1,000 bomber aircraft flying over down there, the 1,000 bomber raids. Going over to Germany, and we were near to an American base where Major Glenn Miller came across to play there, and they had a big American salvage unit next to us. Some of the boys used to go over there to get these flying jackets and stuff like that, you know. And we did have some food from the Americans, things like curry, because we used to, the West Indians used to cook for themselves. And we had a sugar ration. We had 8 ounces of sugar a week, which the other service people didn't get. But because we were accustomed to having sugar, you know, we had that. We were in a place called Dis in Norfolk. It was long parish.
So they moved you down from Yorkshire. You started to come yeah. south,
yes.
as it were.
Mm. Finally, I went down to Long Parish, which was bomb disposal. It was all sorts of different explosive there.
And so it was special training that you were doing at this point.
What we were doing, we were testing the bombs for. They had like a little dingy wall-like place. We used to take the bomb in there, and the sergeant used to leave it. So if the bomb went off, just one person got blown up, and he used to test the bomb, the tail and the fin, just put a thing to see that everything was working, and we would take the bombs out again. There was one airman who he smoked at the time, and we had some senior officers that came down to visit us that day, and we smelled smoke, and then these officers went round the back. And there was this airman. He sat on a 500-pound bomb, and he was smoking. And he was so shocked when everybody went around there. He said, "I beg your pardon, excuse me, sir. Thank you very much." They realized how serious it was, but because he started really, you know, and they sort of didn't punish him or anything, you know, they just told him off. But can you imagine sitting on a £500 bomb smoking?
How much training did they give you before you got close up with them? No, we didn't get any training.
No, we are just sort of let loose on these bombs, rockets, the lot. Yeah.
And so you were having to maneuver them, basically.
Yes.
And what did you use?
We had some trolley type. Okay. But,
and were they sort of padded or sprung?
No, it was just but you see, they didn't have fuse in at the time.
Mm-hmm. All right, so they weren't supposed to be quite so dangerous.
No, because the fuse wasn't in there.
Were there ever any accidents?
No. And there was hundreds, thousands of bombs, you know, because the bombs used to leave from there, and they went to the aircraft straight away, and they were over Germany in just a matter of hours.
So were you close to a factory? Were you close to
the lorry? No, they used to come in by lorry.
So lorries full of bombs would arrive, and then you'd have to take them off the lorry and wheel them to this secure place. Yeah. They were tested. Things were tested.
Yes.
And then you'd have to wheel them back and they'd go off again on the lorry. Do you have any special equipment, protective equipment?
No, the only thing they had was this thing for testing the tail fin and the actual bomb, the trigger goes off that they were working. And we had concert once a month or something like that, and I was detailed once to light the fire in the cinema where they used to have this concert. And I've never lit a fire in my life before, you know, coal fire. And it took me about 2 hours. And still, I couldn't get the stove to light. We went into the kitchen and we got shovels of coal. Eventually, somebody helped me and we lit this. We had this round stove in the center of the, it was a sort of Nissen hut. And this is where the concert was, you know. They never put me back on that duty again.
So, what sort of concerts did you have?
We had ENSA or cinema, and we had the ENSA people come down. See.
And how long were you there for?
Long Parish, 45. Then I went to Pulham.
So this is Norfolk.
Mm-hmm. Pulham. That was near the American base. Then I went to Westmoreland from there.
Now, is there anything that you can say that about Norfolk? Because we're coming up to the end of the reel. Was it just a sort of holding before you went on to Kent?
No, it was a maintenance unit. Again, they were dealing with ammunition. They had a great big hangar there from the First World War in Pulham, St. Mary.
So similar duties.
Mm-hmm.
Similar duties. In that case, we'll stop this reel and we'll start the next reel.